Thank you, buddy. It was Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the South 60 group. It's great to be here. And I was just talking about this group because I was on a meeting earlier with Stevie B, and he was mentioning this group, because that's when I first met Stevie, when he came in. What was it, like 20 years ago, 21, 22 years ago? And it's great to be here at this meeting. I do a lot of Zoom meetings. We got some Zoom people here that I love, you know, from all over the world. But I also do, it's good getting back to these meetings. I'll be over at the West Side Men's, what is it? Where am I?
West Side Men's tomorrow night.
West Side Men's tonight. I mean, the last time I spoke there was 35 years ago. It took them that long to fucking get over it. You know what I mean? And Jesus, some people are very touchy. You know what I mean? And so I'm here to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable and say a lot of, I'm going to say as much crap as I can possibly say so that it disturbs you and you hate me when you walk out. Who the hell invited that asshole? You know what I mean? And so 5 years from now, if I'm still alive, you can come up to me and say, you know, I used to hate you, but now I love you or something like that. Whatever they say, you know. What is that great line from A Few Good Men? The truth, you can't handle the truth. When you're insane, when you come in here and you're insane because you're an alcoholic, you start running into sane people, they'll tell you shit you say, I can't believe that crap, you know. And I just want to stop drinking. I don't want to do any of that other stuff. So tonight, don't put any pressure on me. A lot of people come in and say, well, this must be step number three. It's going to be step number three. And step number six and a bunch of other steps. It'll be whatever it is. You're going to hear whatever you're going to hear, you know. And I tell that story. These are true stories. You know, I've been around. I'm in my 41st year. So it says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we are now. So I got a lot of stories. I got stories before I drank. I got stories while I was drinking. I got drunk a lot of stories, which I don't really tell that much. And I got stories for 41 years of stories as the stories about victory and learning about what this disease is really about and stuff like that. So we'll just sort of mix them all up and throw them into the blender and see what comes out, you know. And you're going to hear what you're going to hear. And I told this one, you know, I told this chicken on the roof story. It's a true story, but it's to give you an idea how this thing works and how God is in charge. It was about 35, 36 years ago. I was down in Homestead doing a step series like this, and I have no idea what I was talking about when I had 4 or 5 years. Who the hell knows? But I was saying something, and I don't know what step I was on or what the story was, but it was a room. There was a bunch of people down at Homestead, and I was talking to them, and I got this feeling, you know, because I'm an alcoholic, so it's all about the feelings, right? You know? Anybody says to you, get into your feelings, shoot the son of a bitch. You know what I mean? I've been in touch with my feelings my entire life. You know, you can put people in front of me that are dying of cancer, you know, whatever it is. You know what I mean? All I think about is, you know, why is this happening to me? You know what I mean? I'm so in touch with my feelings. You know, your feelings will kill you. Get rid of them, you know? You know, you just find your inner child and slap the shit out of them and, you know, you know, tell you what. Get rid of them feelings, you know. It's like teenagers do that, right? I thought what teenagers are like that, these feelings, you know. And so I was down there and I was doing this meeting and I don't know, I probably looked at somebody, looked at me funny, or they weren't all cracking up at my jokes. So whatever the hell it was, I didn't feel the love, you know. Because an alcoholic, when you ultimately learn, says unless an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious and true happiness, he'll find none at all. By the way, if you see me doing stuff like that, it's from the book. It's from the big book. It's from the 12 and 12. It's from Dr. Bob. It's from our comps approved material. And apparently there are consequences of being an alcoholic more than just the drinking. As a matter of fact, apparently, according to the book, this is my theory, the drinking is the least of the problems. Can you believe that? The drinking's the least of the problems. It's only a symptom of the disease, the real disease centers in your mind, not your body. So apparently, when they say, leave power greater than yourself will restore you to sanity, and there is a power that can restore you to sanity, or you can remain insane.
And ultimately, that power does work, by the way. It will restore you to sanity, but in bits and pieces. You know, it's not like all of a sudden it works like that. It doesn't work as fast as scotch. Scotch works pretty quick. You know, alcohol, that's why I'm an alcoholic, because no woman, no car, no amount of money ever worked quite as well and quite as fast as just a few drinks. Is that for me? I mean, so that's okay. I used to rag on people that had phones going off during the meetings. Yeah. But I get upset, you know, and it's a lack of sobriety on my, I get upset. And then one day, this is a true story. One day I'm ragging on somebody. I made some sort of statement. Anybody who has their phone on in the meeting isn't really sober. Some, I say shit like that just to piss people off and bother them, you know, because, you know, once they're pissed off at you, you know, one thing, you know, if they're pissed off at you, they're listening. You get it? They're listening. If they're smiling, they're not necessarily, but if they're pissed off, they're fucking listening to you, you know? And what are they going to do? They're pissed off listening. They go outside. They're either going to drink because they have resentment, or they're going to write it down, do an inventory list, pray about it, talk to their sponsor. And they're going to say, they're going to find out what the problem is, you know what I mean? And why they are pissed at me. And then they're going to love me. They're going to pray for me and love me. They got no choice. That's the tough thing. So I'm at this meeting. I'm talking and I'm looking. You know how we are. We're just so the wrongdoings of others fancy to rear real imaginary shit drives us crazy. Because don't you know, if you're an alcoholic, one of the consequences of being an alcoholic is you can read people's minds. You know, and you can look at somebody, know all about them. Like I'd be in a bar. I was a lounge lizard. You know, every night I'm there at the bar looking to nail something, you know, and I'd be looking at the door and some guy would walk in with a good looking gal, good looking blonde or something. And I'd turn to my friend and I'd say, look at that asshole. I immediately didn't like him, you know, and I just knew I didn't like that guy. I don't know what you think about something. You know what they're thinking about, you know. But you just walk in the bar, you say, you want to belong to the group, you know, like you, you know, because if you're an alcoholic, you're also a please don't reject me, a holic, you know, tell me I'm wonderful, holic. And I wanted to join the group. The group accepted me. I take a couple of shots of that shit, you know, the scotch, and I felt like I owned the freaking group, you know. You know what it does for you. You want to go up to that good looking gal, but you're scared. What if she rejects you and laughs at you or something like that? You take a couple of shots of that. Who gives a shit? You know, you walk up to them and they say, no, thank you. You say, hey, you're a lost bitch. You know what I mean? It's like you into something. It turns you into, I don't know, somebody who doesn't have alcohol, whatever that is. Apparently, alcoholism has something to do with anxiety, worrying about yourself or worrying about other people think about you. Although you tell yourself all the time, you don't give a shit what other people think about you. All you do is think about that crap. That's what your brain is like, a giant zoo. I had a zoo brain. You know, right, Matty? You know what a zoo brain is? And no cages. All the fucking animals are loose. All look like you guys. They're all over the place. There's 1,000 animals. I hate every fucking one of them. You know what I mean? I got a grudge against every, you know, I'm, you know, every once in a while I get into fights with them in my brain. You know, I mean, they're living rent free there. I'm fighting this one in my brain, fighting that one in my brain. You know, sometimes. So I'm murdering them, so I kill them. I kill their wives, kill their kids in front of them. Then after they're dead, I resurrect them and I kill them worse, you know what I mean? Because what I want them to suffer for all they did for me. Sometimes I talk to me about sometimes I have a conversation. There's nobody I can have a conversation with. I can't have a conversation with any zoo creatures. You understand what I'm saying? Because they don't understand me and they're assholes anyway, so I'm not gonna talk about them, But luckily for me, I'm also in my brain. And so I can talk to myself about the creatures of my brain. And I just have this great committee going. You're an asshole, Rick, you know, blah, 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 all this stuff going on. And I don't even think, here's the great thing. I'm doing all this shit with 15,000 people in my brain, all bad thoughts about myself and other people. Here's the great part. I don't even see a problem. I don't see a problem because my alcoholic life seems the only normal one. I can't separate the two from the four. To me, this is ever since I was, I don't need alcohol to be like this. As a matter of fact, the alcohol sometimes makes the creatures go away. Makes them go away, you know what I mean? And get rid of the creatures, you know? And no, that's the way I am sober. Restless, irritable, discontent, fighting all the creatures, all the bullshit. Who do they think they are? They have no idea who they don't have no idea who I am. You don't know who you're fucking with. You know, why is this always happening to me? You know, I can't believe this bullshit. You know, what a loser. You're a loser. You're a loser. He's an asshole. And when I, after I do that for a while, then I just start saying things like, I'm such a jerk. I'll never get anywhere. I'm such a loser. I talk to myself a little like that. You know, when you talk to you, when you start, by the way, sometimes you'll be in the shower driving, you say things like, all of a sudden this voice says, you're such an asshole. You ought to kill yourself. So you turn around and see who's telling you that shit and you're the only one in the car. When you're saying that stuff to yourself, you're wondering what that's all about. That's your reputation about you with yourself. That's what you really think about you. You know, unworthy, unholy, a piece of shit, a real phony baloney piece of crap, hoping that nobody will ever find out an asshole you really are. And, but you know, the good thing is with phones these days, you can text. And if you're texting somebody on Facebook or you're doing all this shit, what happens is it's distracting you from realizing what an asshole you are. Or you can go to the movies, or you can turn on TV, or you can go get laid, or you can talk to a woman, or you can do a lot. You just have to keep busy. And whatever you do, avoid silence. Silence is real bad for an alcoholic because then you start thinking about shit. It's all bad shit. You know what I mean? I know it's bad shit because every time a sponsee or a grand sponsee or somebody comes up to me and says to me, you know, I was thinking, bad shit comes out of their mouth, you know? It's like, says, you know, I'm having a problem. He says, really? What's the problem? He says, well, I've been thinking. And that's it. Here comes the bullshit. You know what I mean? I've been thinking, you know? But that's how they used to cure alcoholism, with lobotomies. And, you know, so I got this thing called alcoholism, and I don't even know what it is because I don't even think. And you know something? I tend to hang around people that think me. If I'm not talking behind my, because one of the things you do if you're an alcoholic is you like to talk bad shit about other people behind their back. They call it gossip, you know? Gossip is like what women do. What men, they don't do that. Men, we just say bad shit about other people behind their back. Hey, you know that guy, you know that guy Ralph? He's, what a fucking asshole he is. You know, he's an asshole. Yeah, he's an asshole. Oh, you know who else? He's, you know who else is an asshole? George, total fucking asshole. You know what I mean? And I do that. It's a form of conversation. I don't think there's anything wrong with that because everybody in the bar, so we do the same thing. We just wait for the other guy to be done so we can talk about all the assholes in our lives, you know? And the reason you do that is because, and I don't know how this works. I'm not a psychologist. I'm sure it's some sort of psychological thing. But if I can get in a conversation with you talking bad shit about other people, and especially if you agree with me, it makes me feel better. You believe that? It makes me feel better. And nobody can arrest you for driving while thinking bad thoughts about other people. In other words, you can do, see, that's the real, the alcoholism is not the drinking. That's just a symptom of an alcoholic. Alcoholics drink because they can't stand their fucking life sober. They hate, sober is painful. You get to the point, the alcohol is the only thing, seems to be the only thing that works. You get to the point where you have to give up the alcohol because your life is miserable and you give up the alcohol, then you got a real problem. Then you're dealing with, you know, Ralph, he's an asshole. You know, Joy, then you're dealing with the real deal with no anesthesia, with no scotch or anything like that. If you're lucky, you go to meetings, get a sponsor, you know, you listen to people, they sort of like distract you from the bullshit. You feel a little bit better. And then you go back home and man, before you even hit the door, you're thinking bad shit about yourself and other people. Never goes away. Never goes away. It's the brain shit. You know what I mean? So I'm at this meeting in Homestead and you know, it's like I said, you know, we're like mine. I'm not getting good vibes, you know, from the group. And it's the worst. It ends up being, in my opinion, the worst meeting. I think it was on third step. Like this meeting is supposed to be on third step. It's the up until this point, that was the worst meeting on the third step ever in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I left and I wasn't going to go back. I ain't going back there, you know, because that's what alcoholics do. They just don't go back. You know, they just, even though they made a commitment, they don't go back. But I had to go back. I had to go back because I had gotten to the point, at least after 3 or 4 years or 5 years, whatever it was, that because my sponsor had jumped into my head, when anybody asks you to do something, they always say yes. And I had one thing going for me and only one thing, really. More than anything, I didn't want to drink. And I was one of these guys. I'm not one of these guys, like, if you drink, you can always come back. That's not the way they taught me. They taught me if you drink, you may never come back. So I always figured that if I drink, I ain't coming back. Not because I don't want to. I just thought I wouldn't be able to come back. And he had linked up. He had somehow linked up in my mind, not doing if I sort of things that were typically alcoholic, like making excuses, not going back or not going to meet. He used to say to me when I'd make an excuse to not go to a meeting, he says, you know, Russ, when you're making an excuse to not go to a meeting, maybe in the back of your mind, you're thinking it's okay to drink again. And I would believe him. I would believe that shit. You know, I would believe him. I believe that I said, I think you're brainwashing me. He says, maybe your brain needs washing. I believe that shit. And so my brain is telling me, the alcoholism is telling me, don't go back. They don't like you. And another part of my brain is telling me, if you don't go back, you're going to drink again. And that part won. Just one thing, I didn't want to drink. And so I went back. And before the next meeting, which I guess was on the fourth step, whatever, some guy comes up to me and he says, can I talk to you for a second? I said, sure. He says, I just want you to know that I was at your meeting last week and I was sitting in the back of the room. You didn't see me. I came in sort of like after the meeting started. And that was the greatest day of meeting I'd ever been to. That saved my life. And I said, really? And he says, oh, absolutely. He says, my wife has left me, took my baby. I lost my job. I was going to go drink, but I decided to go to the meeting, you know, just to see if, you know, just to go to the meeting, see if anybody can say anything. And when you said the chicken was on the roof, the whole fucking program came alive for me. And I had never said the chicken was on the roof. I took fucking credit for it. I mean, you know, said, oh yeah, chicken on the roof. I knew what he was talking about because I remember there was a certain part of my story that I was talking a little poultry, you know what I mean? But he had got it all wrong. I said the turkey was in the basement, you know what I mean? He got the whole thing mixed up and I didn't correct him, you know, I was well enough to not correct him. But I then realized, you see, I thought my job was to carry the message. I thought that's what my job was, to carry the message. I had the wrong idea. You know, because if my job is to carry the message, then if anybody goes out after this meeting and drinks, I screwed up. You know, I screwed up. I did a lousy meeting. Or if you don't like me, I screwed up. Or if you don't laugh at my jokes, I screwed up. I'm just like a bad, you know. And then I realized that that's not at all. My job is to try to carry the message. I don't carry the message. God carries. You see, that night, I probably did the worst third step meeting I've ever done in my life, but it was the best fucking meeting I could do that night. It was the best meeting I could do that night, as bad as it was. And I said, turkey in the basement. And it went floating around across the room, all the way to the back room, to some guy I didn't even know. Turkey in the basement, turkey in the basement, turkey in the basement. And it goes into his ears. God knows exactly what he needs to hear. And all of a sudden he hears chicken on the roof. And the whole thing comes together for him. And I start thinking that maybe I've got like the power, you know what I mean? And I got nothing because I go to a convention and I'll be speaking. There's like a couple thousand people. I'm speaking at a convention and some guy comes up and he says, man, that was, and it doesn't matter, black, white, rich, poor, fat, thin. It's like, man, you're talking about me. Some gal comes up, he says, talking about me. You're talking, I'm not talking about it, talk about me. And they say, man, when you said this, and sometimes they get it right, I did say that. And then another, when you say that, it's a whole different thing. You know, he says, oh, I heard the second step. Oh, I heard the third step. I heard the 10th step. I heard they, who knows what the hell's going on there. I have nothing to do with it. You know, you hear whatever you hear, you get it. Really, it's really, you know, the world is, it's really, you know, what you see, what you hear. And so if you got 100 people in here, you know, we got 100 different meetings going on. And you'll walk out of here and some guy will remember one out of an hour. You'll remember one thing. It might even be something I actually said. Maybe not. Maybe it'll lead to something else. Another guy will remember a completely different thing. Another guy, and one guy will say, I hate that guy. I won't remember anything at all until like a year from now. I'll say, man, I remember that guy said that. You know what I mean? And we're just sitting here trying, I'm just sitting here trying to do what it says in the big book because of what happened to me, my transformation. You know, what did Dr. Jung said? Ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are the guiding force of these men's lives are pushed to one side. They become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. So I go from a guy who's looking to nail some gal or get some car, you know, to a guy who's just looking to see whether I can help somebody else, you know, because and treat everybody like they have a broken heart because they probably do. And so all of a sudden I find myself going around because it says, once you make a sincere decision, above everything, we must get rid of this selfish muster. It kills us. How do you get rid of selfishness when you don't even think you're selfish? It says, we must get rid of it. And it says, God makes that possible. Once you make a sincere decision for him, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful gives you everything you need if you stay close to him, whoever he is, and perform his works well. And his works are to be of maximum service to him through helping other people, like the Good Samaritan. And so what happens when you start helping other people? I guess it's like extra credit, and you don't even know why you're doing it. And next thing you know, you're doing more and more. Next thing you know, you're feeling better and better. And all of a sudden, you get to a point in your life, you're 72 years old, married 40 years, 7, soon to be 8 grandkids, 4 kids, and self-supporting through my own contributions. And what do you do when all of a sudden you've been around the world, you've done all the shit, you know, you've done all this stuff, and all of a sudden, the greatest time you're having in your life is trying to help others because you care about them. What happens when with all the things that you thought would work for you, the girl, the sex, the money, the car, never worked for you before AA, after AA, never worked for you, never really worked permanently to give you a feeling of fulfillment and a purpose in life. And when you started trying to help other people and love on other people, just like they said in the big book, which was the last thing you wanted to do in here. You wanted to come in here and get sober and then go out and rip, rape, and run and get all the things you lost. And when all of a sudden you start doing this stuff, what do you do when you found the only thing in your life that actually works? And it works. You know, I was told a long time ago, if you don't know why you're on the planet Earth and have a purpose before you reach the age of 30, you're going to be one neurotic son of a bitch. And I was one neurotic son of a bitch because I didn't have any purpose. For years, I was sure my purpose was to make money, have sex, get married, what you name, all worldly. You know, I remember, you know, I go to pick up when I was like 20 years old or 18 years old or 19. I had inherited a few bucks. I've never been able to keep money in my pocket because that's, scotch is not what you learn ultimately after you stop this thing, is that scotch is not the only higher power. Scotch was my higher power. Beer was my higher power. Women was my higher power. Job was my higher power. Money is my higher power. Everything on the planet you can lust, want, or need, I'm an if-onlier. I don't know what kind of alcohol. I'm an alcoholic that I wake up in the morning and I say, if only I had a different wife. If I only had a better girlfriend. If only I could get hooked up. If only I had money. If only I had, I got so many things that I absolutely assure will fix me. And you know why? Because they work just like scotch worked. Because scotch did work. The woman did work. The scotch worked. I mean, the woman, the sex worked. The job worked. It works. It works. but it works like the alcohol works. You know, then you worry about, you spend your life worrying about grabbing that shit. And when you can't grab it, you get frustrated and you get depressed. And maybe you're lucky and you grab it and you feel good for a while. And then you worry about keeping it and what's going to happen if you can't keep it. And me, because especially women, it's tough. You know, it's not like a bottle of scotch that doesn't, you know, at least scotch won't talk back to you. You know what I mean? Scotch won't say no. You know what I'm talking about? But women, you can't, I mean, you know, I'm married 40 years. Let me tell you something. The moods, what's that all about? You know, of course, she's married to me. I mean, I can't control them. So I don't, she, the other day she said, are we going to be together in heaven? This is true. You know, I said, I don't know, honey, it's till death do us part. Don't be looking for me. You know, I'm out of here. You know, I'm a lawyer. I've read the contract, you know, that's the deal, you know, and sure. You don't know what it's like. And you know, what happens when you get all this shit and you have no, and then you get the car and the car gets old or has a flat and it's like, it's got a half-life of like a week. And then it's back to the fucking if only again, you know? So I went down because I'm a guy. I spend money I don't have to buy shit I don't need, I don't like, and all that sort of stuff. And I didn't learn until I was 10 years sober why I was broke all the time, even though I made a lot of money. And that, my sponsor told me, he says, when you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. You know that? I didn't know that. As long as I can make the payments, you know, just buy shit, you know, because when buying shit makes you feel good. If you're depressed, get a haircut, you know what I mean? Change your hair color. I don't know. Enlarge your breasts. I don't know what you're going to do. You know, just change something. Lose pounds. Do something. Get a new pair of slacks. Get a new shirt, you know? Buy a new car. You know, my whole life is that shit. My whole life is running around buying shit, spending money, looking for crap. None of it works. None of it works to prove that I'm not a piece of shit. And as I'm driving in my new car with my new girlfriend, all of a sudden the boy says, you are one piece of shit. Now what are you going to do? You know, now you got a real problem, you know? So I went out down and I bought the car. Brand new Camaro, 1971, brand new. First thing in the market, sleek, unbelievable. It was bronze with a white Landau top. Really cheesy now if you saw it, but I mean, I liked it right then. It was pretty cool. I got a picture of it. My girlfriend at the time, you know, this is a true story. We were driving down the Keys. I said, wait, stop right here. And I parked my car right by the water. And I got out and I said, take a picture of me with the car. I got the fucking picture in my eyes. I showed it to you. I said, take a picture of me with the car. Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. I'm sure you guys never did shit like that. But in any event, so I get this car and I'm driving all, and I pay for the car. He said, okay, give me the car. Because I don't know about you, but I want it like now. Immediate. I need an immediate fit. There ain't no waiting. And he says, no, we got to prep it. No, forget the part. You paid for it. No, the lawyer, come back here tomorrow. So the next morning I'm there like 7:30 waiting for the car. Car comes off the line. It's around 8:30 at Miami Beach and it's beautiful and it's got like, you know, 50 miles on it, whatever it is. I get in the car, you know, I'm about 200 miles pounds lighter than I am right now. I'm like a kid, you know, I'm buff and I got my sunglasses on, you know, my Tom Cruise sunglasses. I got the t-shirt on rolled up with the cigarettes. I got a cigarette dangling from my mouth. I got the windows down. I got my hand out the window with the cigarette in the hand. I'm driving down Alton Road in Miami Beach waiting to be discovered. I'm thinking that every woman in China is looking at me. You know what I mean? Like I'm in Yankee Stadium. I'm thinking, how many women are there in China? Good looking ones. You know what I mean? What do you think? A billion? Could I go through a billion in a lifetime? You know what I mean? I'm thinking shit like that. I'm an alcoholic. I think weird shit. You know what I mean? And not like you guys. I've got the grave emotional and mental disorder thing, you know? So, which should give you guys hope. And I come to a light and I know you're all wondering, what does this have to do with the third step? Just hold on. I'm gonna fucking pull this thing off. We're gonna get this train robbed. You're not gonna believe this. I'm gonna close this thing down. This is gonna be as bad as the Homestead meeting, okay? I stop at a light in the brand new Camaro and some guy, some old fart, you know, I'm like young, I'm like 20 years old. some old guy, you know, some old guy who should be really dead, you know, probably a guy like my age, you know what I mean? Pulls up in a brand new Cadillac convertible, red, with the Playboy bunny sitting next to me. And Playboy magazine, you know, I don't even know if they have it anymore, was my Bible, you know, a member of the Playboy bunny. I look at him and he looks at me. I'm actually looking up at him because my car, I'm looking up and he's looking at me. I'm looking at him, he's looking at me. In my mind, I'm saying, why can't I have a car like that? I mean, the feeling of being okay last 3 blocks, you know, the payments lasted 36 months. That's my life. That's my life. I'm sitting in college. Some gal walks in with legs up to here. Gorgeous, you know, cheerleader and everything. I said, man, if I could have that gal, I'd be okay. I put on the full court press. You know how we Alkies are, to charm her, insinuate myself into her life. Her father's a doctor, her mother's a lawyer, her grandfather's a lawyer, all professionals. I switched majors from being a math major. I immediately decide I was going for my doctorate in algebraology. I immediately decide I'm going to be a lawyer. And people say, why'd you become a lawyer? Why'd you become a lawyer? I said, well, I like Perry Mason. I said, you don't want to know why I became a lawyer? I figured it out, to get in some gal's pants. You think that's a crazy motive? That's my entire life. Going in a bar, trying to say something, do something, to get in somebody's path. That's my life, to get a relationship going. If I'm in a relationship, I'm up here, I'm okay. If I'm not in a relationship, I'm a piece of crap. If I got some, all I needed in my life, I could be the best bum in the world, the worst father, the worst anything in the world. If I could get some gal to like me, there was no problem. I just needed some poor gal to take pity on me and like me, and I'd feel okay. I know there was no problem. I think things started really going, I started really hitting bottom when they all ran away. And it was just imaginary shit in my mind where I could listen to radio. Like I used to listen to these songs, I'm Mr. Blue, Only the Lonely. I think about all the gals. I think about my funeral and shit like that. You know, when all the shit came down on me and everybody left and there was nobody there, that's when I knew my life was over. So I married this gal. We had a kid, lived in a beautiful house in Miami Beach. I was a division chief, state's attorney's office, trying murder. Everything was wonderful for about, I don't know what, 6 months. 6 months. Just beautiful, wonderful kid. And then I'm drinking at the bar with the homicide cops and doing all that stuff, and I'm looking at the gals on the dance floor, the blondes, the redheads, the brunette, and I'm saying this, man, if only I wasn't married. My wife's at home with the baby. I never cheated on her, never physically cheated on her. I just sit in the bar till 4 o'clock in the morning saying, if only I wasn't married. That's all I do. Let me tell you something. I don't know whether you've ever cared about somebody or loved somebody. I don't think I ever loved anybody. I didn't even know what love was until I came to AA. That's the truth. There's a difference between love and lust. Love, you know, what I had was whatever. What I had is whatever I had. It was a thing where you take from somebody. You take from somebody to fix yourself, and you don't give them shit. That's what I had. I don't know what word you want to put on it. It has something to do with selfishness. It has to do with squeezing somebody dry and taking from somebody and making sure they always do things your way and they better not cross you. And I squeeze the hell out of them to get whatever I need. You know what I mean? And when they stop giving me what I need, I discard them. That's what I had. So I don't know. Is that love? We'd have to make up a new word for that. We got to make up a word for that. Alky, I call it alky love. I had alky love, you know? And that's what I call it, alky, you know? And if anybody's experienced that, we're always thinking about the person, you know, all such stuff. And then, you know, that's what I had, you know? And then she finally told me, come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. And she kicked me out because I came home drunk that night, and that was the end of my marriage. And then we went to a marriage counselor. You know, I got a wife, I got a 5-year-old kid, I have a beautiful house on my beach, and marriage counselor says to my wife, she says, "What do you want to change about Russell?" And she's saying something. I don't remember because I wasn't listening. I wasn't listening because I had a date with a redhead that night. I'd finally broken free. When I hit the steps, I said, I'm free, free to go to the bar. I could stay in the bar. I was never not to go to the bar. And then he asked me, he turns to me, and I said, this is going to screw up anything. I finally got out of this thing. She kicked me out, and And he said to me, Russ, what do you want to change about your wife? I said, I just want to date other women. And that was the end of the marriage. And that was the end of the session. And I was a lawyer, but what I really was an asshole in a three-piece suit. And when I said that, I didn't think anything of it. I didn't think anything of what she felt, because you want to know something? In my entire life as an alcoholic, prior to AA and even after AA to a certain extent, I never thought of anybody else's feelings except my own. So don't talk to me about your fucking feelings. The only feeling that's important to me is how I feel. You could be dying there on the street. Now, the problem with this thing is once you get involved in this deal, all of a sudden you look back and you start thinking, man, I can't believe I said that. Man, the effect that must have had on her, you know, that kind of thing. That's it. And you know something? I said that I was cold stone sober. I'd love to blame everything I did on everybody on alcohol. Oh, alcohol made me do it. Most of the times I hurt people and I disappointed them, I was cold stone sober. That's the disease I have. I have a disease where I'm an asshole without the drinking. You know, I'm probably I was a nice guy when I was drinking. I'm an asshole and self-centered bitch, you know, when I'm not drinking. So what does this have to do with the third step? So what is the problem, you know? What happens when you stop drinking? And you may not even understand this for many, many years. It may take the first 10 years of your sobriety to see what alcoholism is really about. It's not about the drinking. It's not about the drinking. Alcoholics drink because they have alcoholism. They have alcoholism even when they're not drinking. They have alcoholism when they're not drinking. They have alcoholism before they start drinking. They have alcoholism during the drinking. They got alcoholism after they stop drinking. Alcoholism goes on. You know, the bottom line is, you may not know what goes on because the fact of the matter is you don't know what it's really about. But if you're fortunate, and it's going to happen because that's the nature of the disease, as you go on in life without the booze, you're going to realize from time to time that you're unhappy or you're nervous or you're anxious or you're angry or what the hell? Life is just shit and you're just shit. And you're going to say to yourself at 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or 1 year, what the fuck is wrong with me? I'm not drinking and I feel like shit. I'm not drinking and I'm very depressed. You may tell it to a doctor. I'm very, very depressed. I'm very, very nervous. Doctors don't really know. You know what I mean? So you start telling a doctor because you haven't done the fourth step or the fifth step or any of the steps or you don't have a sponsor. You know, when you don't do stuff like that, you feel even worse. So you start telling the doctor you don't feel good or you're feeling depressed or you can't sleep and shit like that, which is what happens when people don't do the steps and they don't work the program and they don't have a higher power or anything like that. You start telling the doctor that, they're going to do what doctors do. They're going to say, they're going to hand you a pill and they're going to say, try these things. This will make it all better. But what they're really saying, this is what they're really saying. They're saying this before you start handing your disease over to an expert. This is what they're really saying. They're saying, he's saying, listen, I have no idea what the fuck is wrong with you. But why don't you chew on this shit? You know what I mean? And maybe it'll quiet you down so I can deal with somebody who has a real problem. You know, and that's what they're trying. My God. But the problem is, you see, a pill won't give you integrity. A pill won't help you care about and love other people. Pill may sort of dull you down or something, but it ain't going to turn you from a selfish son of a bitch who somebody really cares about somebody. There's got to be some sort of incredible transformation. How do you turn a guy who doesn't give a shit about anybody else in their life except themselves and acquiring things? How do you turn a guy into somebody that the only thing that's important to them is his, like Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease. God, I got to keep talking about him, telling us, as a guy who wants to give all credit to the Lord, to God, to making God the centerpiece of his life and help other people. and enjoying the shit out of it and experience the joy of living. How do you turn that guy from that guy to the other? How does that happen? And it only happens through a power greater than yourself, which I choose to call God. Now, how do you do that with a guy who's a defiant, arrogant alcoholic, who thinks he's the smartest guy in the room? And if you try to tell him anything, his basic reaction is, why don't you just go fuck yourself? That's a miracle. That's a miracle. How do you tell a guy like that, that his real problem is he has to develop a relationship with God? When everything in his body, which is part and parcel of alcoholism, because they have a thing called chapter of the agnostics. They say if a mere code of morals, better philosophy of life would help us be sober a long time. It doesn't help us because we don't have the power. We have no power. We're powerless. Listen, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. They're not shitting you. You know what I mean? Half measures avail us nothing. There's no middle road. God is either everything or he's nothing. You know, we were on a new base, the base of trust and rely upon God. It's all about God, and it's all about dealing with people that just will not accept that shit. They'll sit in A rooms for 20 years, probably stay sober, never be rocked in the fourth dimension of existence, and they'll sit in A rooms all over the country and say, we don't talk a lot about the God thing. We might scare the newcomer. Bullshit. You don't scare the newcomer. It's scaring your ass because you don't want to do it. You want to say, miserable son of a bitch you are, you know what I mean? Making believe you're sober and you're being rocketed and you're using that as an excuse. Not because where is the newcomer going to go? Let me tell you something. By the time I got here, I ain't going nowhere. You could say they were probably talking about God, Jesus, whatever it is. Nobody was going to chase me out of the room because I got to tell you something. I don't know about you. I did not want to drink. And there were no other groups in town handling the not drinking club thing. So I'm just lucky that the Christians didn't come to get me because I'd be down at the airport right now with a tambourine. You know what I mean? That's the deal for me, you know? And so the bottom line is that most of the people don't want to talk about God because they're scared if we talk about it, they might actually have to do it. And so they make believe they have a fellowship that's, let's call it AA light, pasteurized, homogenized AA, a form of religion without power, a form of fellowship without power. And people dropping off the face of the earth because many are called, few are chosen. And 90% of the people that come, you know how many, used to be a statistic, I don't know what they had, but this is one I heard, 0.5% stay sober for more than 20 years. That's like 1 in 200 stay sober for more than 20 years. And of the ones that stay sober for more than 20 years, believe me, and I know them because I sponsor them, there's a lot of guys with 30 years that are miserable. Here, they're an alcoholic. Sober for a while, says feel better, look better, have a better time. We smile at such salad. We know he'll try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon he'll know loneliness as few do. I've seen him drink at 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. Why do people drink at 10 years? Why do people drink at 20 years? Why do people drink at 5 years? It ain't because of a craving for alcohol. I understand the craving mechanism. I understand the chemical thing. I understand once they have one, once I have one potato chip, I got to have another one. I understand that. But after 20 years of going to these programs, 10 years, 6 months, how about 3 months? How about 1 month where you're not on alcohol? You drink that. It has nothing to do with fucking alcohol. It has to do with something called alcoholism. It has to do with untreated alcoholism. People drink at 20 years because they were never sober. There are two groups in here. There's the not drinking club. And there's the rocket in the fourth dimension club. Don't kid yourself. You'll meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God keep you. And I know what Dr. Bob said. I know what the founder said. I know what Dr. Bob said. If you're an atheist, an agnostic, have some sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from understanding what the hell we're telling you, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly father will never let you down. And so we introduce people in this group to the third step. Say, okay, here's the steps. And what is the third step? You get down on your knees and say the third step prayer. And now you're done, right? That's what I did. I got down on my knees in my bathroom. I locked the door. Just in case somebody would come in, I wouldn't want to be caught dead that way. I locked the door. I got down to the third step, so I'm done. I turned my life over to God. I felt it. It sort of works. It's sort of like It's sort of like a little baptism, a little something, a little circumcision, whatever the heck it is. Something where you go in the room and say, I did the third step. And so I'm done, right? Not even close. Not even, if you want, we have you only go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Not even close. People, you know, A has gone to a place that was God-centered. I'm not even going to go into the whole thing about that. We'll do that later. God-centered to a place where we applaud atheism. You know, you're gonna have to make a choice somewhere along the line whether or not you want to be sober, a sober man. You know, there's a big difference between being ready to do the third step and being entirely ready to have God remove all your defects of character. What's entirely ready mean? I'll tell you this, it separates the men from the boys. I'll tell you this, there's a great separation. I'll tell you this, that's what entirely, I can tell you that. There's a big, you know, let me explain to you something so that you understand something clearly, as clear as I can say it. Read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Say, read Bill's story. Read Bill's story. I don't have time to go through the whole thing about the emotional sobriety and the essay he wrote and everything. We'll go through that in another session. But let me explain to you where this whole thing came from. Bill was in his story, and I'm going to paraphrase this. This is what he says. He says that he was approached by Abby Thatcher, and he was talked about God and didn't want to hear it. He didn't, just like it says in that chapter of the Agnostics. You know what it says? We had to have a mere code of form. We had to have God. This sort of thinking, agnosticism, all this had to be abandoned. That's what the whole thing is. That they wrote a chapter of Agnostics basically to say, don't be agnostic. Don't be an atheist. They take a stand in AA about that. Don't be telling me that you're doing the steps and you're an atheist, or you're doing the steps and you're an agnostic. You can't. You're supposed to turn your will and... become entirely ready to have God remove all your defects of character? Well, if you don't believe in God, how does that work? You become entirely ready to have Sheldon remove my defects of character? Have the AA group remove my defects of character? You guys? I mean, AA, the Fellowship of AA. It ain't Well People's Anonymous. You know, do you guys entirely ready to have? Oh, I get it. Entirely ready to have me remove my defects of character. But I'm powerless. How does that work? How do you do the step? How do you make chocolate cake and take the fucking chocolate out of it? And make believe. You know what that is? That's make believe thinking. That's alk-imaginary thinking. That's how you lie. That's how alcoholics can lie to each other and lie to themselves and make believe shit. And say, and that's why they drink again, because they're not working a program. That's the deal. That's how it happened. And so, what? Well, I'll probably drink some. So, in any event, so the bottom line is. But as you go along, but you know, that's what Bill. So in Bill Wilson's story, this is what he says. You look it up. This is what he says about a God. God of the universe, all that sort of stuff. He says, I didn't want to hear it. This is what he says. I did not want to hear it. Then they talked to me about God personal to me, a personal God personal to me. He said, I really didn't want that shit. I was brought up on that shit. I really didn't want to hear that shit. He doesn't use the word shit. I threw that in there. So you'll see. If you look it up in the book, he says, then they suggested to him, well, why don't you just choose God, you know, you make up a God that you like. And he says, that I could buy. That's exactly what he says. He says, I could do that. I couldn't go with a personal God. I couldn't go with a wisdom God, but a God I could make up that I could do. Now, I'm not saying that's bad. And that's maybe for a newcomer because we're in a spiritual kindergarten. But understand that God, as you understand him, was the starting point of getting people to the point where they would eventually call God, God, get over it and lose all prejudice, even against organized religion, and never apologize for God. We never apologize for God. All men of faith have courage. They trust God. We never apologize for God. We let him demonstrate in our lives what we do. That is straight out of book AA, saying to people, when Bill Wilson said, you can make up your own God, make up whatever you want to say. You know, the rabbit can be your God. You know, the group, whatever can be your God. That was a way of helping babies who were defiant, who wouldn't do the program, to walk into the damn room. Nowadays, most people think that's the way it's supposed to be forever. Nowadays, people think that's the whole standard of AA. I know AA is not allied with any sect denomination religion, but I'm going to suggest to you, you better get your ass allied if you're going to live in this crazy world. There's going to be shit going on in your life, from cancer to people leaving and people dying and stuff going on. You know what I mean? There's going to be a lot of shit going on. You better get allied. You know, you're going to learn one day. You're going to get to one day, maybe 20 years, you're going to realize the room ain't going to help. You're going to be going to all the meetings. You're going to be dead. Everything in the world, try to stay sober. And you're going to be driving a car saying to yourself, I'm an asshole. I wish I was dead. Then what are you going to do when AA doesn't work? When you're just, you know, hanging on by a thread? You know, because that's what it's about. You know, that's what do you do when the God they're talking about, there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. What do you do when the God that has all power is not necessarily the God that you made up in your own mind? What do you do when the God that has all power, what do you do when the God you made up in your own mind doesn't help with the breast cancer? What do you do when you have breast cancer and they say it's aggressive? What are you going to do when you don't have God? And you just have something you made up in your own mind. What are you going to do when shit gets serious? What are you going to do when the IRS clears out all your funds? What are you going to do when you're broke and you're being your house is being foreclosed on? What are you going to do with one of your children dies or has cancer? Who are you going to pray to? Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters? You're going to call something you made up in your own mind that you're not even clear on? What are you going to do? You're going to walk around like a bunch of thumb-sucking crybabies. Or are you going to drink? Or are you going to be miserable? Or are you going to be depressed? Or are you going to go to the doctor? He's going to give you a few pills. How are you going to face life? How are you going to face the real deal? You know, it's not easy out there. I don't know. Have you guys been watching what's going on? You know, they ain't all lining up saying, what can I do for you to help you? No, it ain't working like that, is it? It's working like that. And here's the bottom line. It's like my sponsor told me, many are called a few. The truth is, what you're ultimately going to learn is that most people that are in AA don't do it that way. That's the way they did it. You read Dr. Bob in the good old times. That's the way they did it in 1935, 30, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41. They do it. These days, that's not the way they do it. They don't do it that way. You know, they, you know, you're going to, you make the choice. A true alcoholics are called to make the choice between being emotionally sober and trusting in God and being cool. They'll choose, most alkies, 90% will choose cool every time. That's why you sit in meetings and you may want to even say the word God, but you don't say it. You say HP, higher, but you say everything but God, because in your mind, you're worried about what the guy sitting next to you, who isn't even paying your fucking Visa bill, what he's going to think about you. And let me tell you something. When the God is all over the steps and God is all over the books and there is one who has all power, that's God, and he's the only hope of salvation. When God is that deal and Bill Wilson believed in God and Dr. Smith believes in God and you're scared to say the word God at an AA meeting where it's all over the wall, don't ever, ever expect that you're going to lose fear of other people. You will never lose fear of other people and what they think about you. And still, until you start doing the real deal, you know, you start dealing. I'm going to end with this one thing. We're a couple minutes. You know, I had a sponsor when I was, I'm not going to talk about this whole thing now. I'm going to tie it up later. I had a sponsor named John Glenn. I met him when I started going to Bible study when I had 11 years. I started going because it wasn't working for me. You know, I was doing everything in AA. I was in a group banquet chairman for 2 years. I was on the relay for 8 years. I was doing the whole bit, sponsoring, and he had moved. And the bottom line is it wasn't working for me. I wasn't happy. And I wasn't miserable, but I wasn't happy. Miserable every once in a while, but most, you know, happy, miserable, anxious. Yeah, I wasn't whatever that rocket ship in the fourth dimension was, experience much of heaven, joy living, I wasn't that after doing this thing real hard. And some guy suggested, you know, why don't I go to Bible study? And my first reaction was, I don't go to Bible study because religion bad, right? You know, because most people, they say I'm spiritual, not religious. They put down religion because we're so righteous. You know what I mean? You know, that's what happens. And so I started going there and I met a guy named John Glenn who had 60 years of sobriety and he was a Baptist missionary. And we would go out to dinner and I'd start eating because you can look at me, you know, I like to eat. And he'd say, what are you doing? I said, I mean, he says, we can't eat. He says, we have to give thanks first. In the middle of the restaurant with all sorts of people around, he bowed his head and I bow my head and he'd start saying a prayer. And it wasn't like one of these short prayers, like, you know, thanks for the grub. It was like a long sort of Baptist prayer or something. You know what I mean? And I'm looking around to see who's looking at me because I'm worried about what they're looking at me. And then he would finish and then he'd look at me and he'd say, you know, Russell, now the food will taste better because it's got that special ingredient. How cheesy. And so I started doing that. You know, and I started doing that. I started praying before me. And you know something? Nobody was looking at me. Nobody cared. I do that every day today with my buddies and the guys I sponsor. And you know something? When I started calling God, God, and not worrying about what other people thought about me, and started really opening up and becoming open-minded to doing precisely following the clear-cut directions they talk about in the book. When I started doing that, you know what happened to me? I stopped worrying about what other people thought about me. I even do strange shit. I talk about God all the time. You're not gonna believe this. I talk about this shit at AA meetings, boldly. I do. I talk about it in conventions. I say Jesus. I talk about Bibles. I say all sorts of shit. You know, they haven't banned me yet. Some guy told me, he said, you know, my sponsor says you're a good speaker, but you talk too much about God. I said, I'd like that on my tombstone. You talk too much about God. I said, well, I guess if they don't like it, they'll stop asking me to talk. And all I know is all I do is I talk about the Lord and what he's done for me. And they invite me to speak at more and more places. I don't know why. I guess somebody wants to see it. Maybe I'm like an oddball. You know what I mean? So you can either decide whether you're going to be the real deal in here, the genuine article, or you're just going to be cool. You know, you're just going to be cool. My kids. I'll tell you this, I have four beautiful kids, fantastic kids, married and grandkids. And my kids think they were brought up with this program and everything like that. My kids think recovered alcoholics are cool. They think drunks are uncool. How do you like that? You know, is that amazing? They think recovered alcoholics that go to church, by the way, you do know in the big book, it says, membership. It says most of us belong to such organizations because we're trying to grow in the image and likeness of God. And so we hang out because the person you are in the next 5 years will depend upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. The books you read will depend upon who you hang out with. And the big book says, in the big book says, we encourage church membership. And you know what they say in AA rooms? They say, we're spiritual, not religious. I'm not spiritual. I'm material. I know who I am. I'm material. You know, you take me away from these rooms, you take me away from God, I'm looking at the redhead all the time. You know what I mean? I know who I am. I know what I lust for and what I look for and what I'm danger of. And that's why God's, because if you want to know how to divorce your thinking from comparing your insides to other people's outsides and worrying about whether you have a new car or an old car, or worrying about whether you're good looking or fat, or worrying about whether or not you have money in the bank or you don't have money, or worrying about your job, or worrying about the things of this world, or worrying about all the shit you don't have. If you're trying to figure out how do you get out of that addiction to the shit in this world and comparing yourself that way, I got news for you. The only way out is God. The only way out is making him the centerpiece of your life. I know that because the big book says, if you want to be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, The great fact is this and nothing less. God has to become the centerpiece of your life, and you have to become convinced that he lives in your heart and mind in a way which is indeed miraculous. He's doing for you what you can't do for yourself. So listen, I hate to tell you this. I don't care what you hear about in the AA rooms, but I'm just quoting the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You may think all this other shit, you know, the church thing all is extra credit. I'll tell you when things start really happening, when you decide you're going to do the extra credit and not roll your eyes and laugh at shit like that. You understand? That's the way it works. Okay. That's all I have to say.